Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 832. Walking the Snake in Ukraine, part 5, subtitled, We All Remember Well the Soviet Invasion of Ukraine and Germany. This is being recorded on January 25th of the year 2015. The title of the program refers to the book Serpents Walk the Nazi Tract, in which the Third Reich goes underground, which happened, builds up their economic muscle, which through the Bormann Capital Network happened, buys into the opinion-forming media, which they are doing, and after the U.S. is devastated with a series of terrorist attacks using martial law, causing the declaration of martial law, terrorist attacks for WMDs, the underground right infiltrates the military and then uses their control of the opinion-forming media to reshape America, which they have commandeered, portraying Hitler and the Nazis as good guys and their opponents as liberators. It basically, as villains, I should say. The Nazis as liberators, their opponents as villains. It is a manifestation of something that Hitler spoke about in his political manifesto and autobiography, Mein Kampf, when he said, most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept the thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to achieve this end. And in opposition to that, the second part of the title, the first part alludes to walking the snake in Ukraine, and we are seeing that happen now. The second part, we all remember well the Soviet invasion of Ukraine and Germany. That is a statement that went unchallenged after the person who said it, Arseniy Yatsenyuk, the former prime minister of Ukraine and one of their top governmental officials, went on German television and again said, we all remember well the Soviet invasion of Ukraine and Germany. This in the course of portraying Russia as an aggressor and et cetera, et cetera. The Soviet invasion of Ukraine and Germany, unquote, is the Second World War. But Germany did just a little bit to rile up the Soviet Union's feathers in that context, which is why they got, quote, invaded, unquote. And we're going to be talking more about Ukraine and the complete perversion of political and historical reality. This coming week, in fact, day after tomorrow, on Tuesday, there will be the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, the top Nazi extermination camp, by Soviet Red Army forces in 1945. There's going to be a big ceremony commemorating that. One of the people who will not be there, because he has been excluded, is Vladimir Putin, president of Russia. His brother was killed in World War II. His father was wounded. And it is quite remarkable that we are going to be seeing this. And it is in the article that I am about to read that Arseniy Yatsenyuk is quoted as saying, we all remember well the Soviet invasion of Ukraine and Germany. It's just like, I'm sure they remember well all those stupid Jews at Auschwitz who just kept committing suicide. I mean, the heroic Ukrainians and Germans tried to keep them well, but they just kept jumping into gas chambers and throwing themselves on the barbed wire. Those stupid Jews, they just kept committing suicide at Auschwitz, despite the benevolence and the best efforts of their German and Ukrainian overseers. By the way, as we will see later, much of the Third Reich personnel staff at Auschwitz was composed of the OUNB, whose direct political heirs are in power in Ukraine. We're going to begin again with another article from the vitally important GermanForeignPolicy.com blog or newsletter that feeds along the lower right front page of the SpitfireList.com website. This is from GermanForeignPolicy.com of January 16th of 2015. It's titled Liberation Without Liberators, and it reads in part as follows. Through their virtual disinvitation, EU countries are preventing the Russian president from participating at the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. The highest representative of the country, whose army had halted the mass murder in the German extermination camp January 27, 1945, is thereby excluded from the commemoration ceremonies. However, Germany's president will participate. President Joachim Gauck had already used his speech on the 75th anniversary of Germany's invasion of Poland to massively stir up sentiments against Moscow and to transform the commemoration of Nazi crimes into an appeal for closing ranks against Russia. In his memoirs, Gauck described Red Army soldiers who had liberated Germany as beings, quote, with Asian facial features reeking of vodka, who requisitioned and stole, unquote. A few years ago, he complained, quote, the occurrence of the German Judeo side has been inflated to a uniqueness, unquote, because, again, quoting, certain milieu plural of post-religious societies were seeking a certain shudder in face of the unspeakable, unquote. In 2010, he was quoted saying, he, quote, wonders how much longer we Germans want to nurture our culture of chagrin. This, by the way, is very subtle language, slowly revising the history of World War II. He had some less subtle language, as we will see. Continuing, the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the liberation of the German Auschwitz extermination camp had been the focus of political intrigues already last year. At the commemoration of the 60th anniversary of its liberation, Russian President Vladimir Putin's participation was still taken for granted. After having suffered severe losses, the Soviet army reached Auschwitz on January 27, 1945, putting an end to the ghastly murders that the Germans were committing. First attempts to exclude Putin from the commemoration of the 70th anniversary were made in Poland in the summer of 2014. A parliamentarian was quoted saying that the Red Army, quote, had been an aggressor, unquote, in World War II, again quoting, just like Nazi troops, unquote, which is why the Russian president should only be allowed to make a penitential pilgrimage, unquote, to Poland. At the time, Bronislaw Komorowski could see nothing wrong with Putin's participation at the Auschwitz commemoration. However, anti-Russian forces had prevailed, and the Russian president's invitation was canceled through diplomatic channels. According to reports, Poland's Prime Minister Ewa Kopacz, K-O-P-A-C-Z, has also campaigned to prevent Putin from participating at a parallel commemoration ceremony in Prague. This would exclude the president of the country whose army had lost more than a million soldiers just to liberate the German Reich and the Polish territories under German occupation. Skipping down and speaking again of Joachim Gauck, whose subtle language has been perverting historical and political reality to not only make the Soviet Union equivalent to Nazi Germany, which simply is not true, he also has been subtly hinting that it's time for Germany to get over its culture of chagrin. In other words, you know, let's not feel ashamed about World War II. We were really pretty good. Skipping down, alluding to Great Britain and France's approbation for Germany's occupation of parts of Czechoslovakia in October of 1938 and targeting Russia in the process, Gauck declared, quote, history teaches us that territorial concessions often whet the appetite of the aggressors, unquote. The commemoration of Nazi crimes was thereby transformed into an appeal to close ranks against Russia, which Germany had invaded. On various occasions before becoming president, Gauck, who, unlike Russia's President Putin, will be present at Auschwitz on January 27th, has made public statements showing how he views Germany's 1945 liberation and the Shoah. In his memoirs, he wrote on the subject of Germany's liberation that it arrived as, quote, horrible news, unquote, He depicted the Red Army soldiers as beings, quote, with Asian facial features, unquote, reeking of vodka, unquote, who requisitioned and stole, unquote, and systematically raped women. Skipping down. Until he was inaugurated president, Gauck's historical views were criticized in German public opinion. For example, he has a knack for using the broad brush in reference to his remarks on the Black Book of Communism, unquote. Gauck had written that, quote, the communists had also made themselves unpopular when they approved Poland's westward acquisition of territory and thereby Germany's loss of its eastern territories. To both the natives and the ex-Belay, this loss of the homeland was considered a great injustice, which the communists sealed in 1950 by recognizing the Oder-Neisse as the new German-Polish border, alleges Gauck. In the conflict over the center against expulsions, he took the side of the president at the time, Erika Steinbach, who was sharply criticized for her historical revisionist statements, particularly in Poland. Gauck is quoted on the German League of Ex-Belay, or BDV, website saying, quote, Berlin is most certainly the best location for a center against expulsions, unquote. It blends in because Berlin is where, quote, there are various topographies of terror, the location of the Wannsee Conference approving the extermination of the Jews and the Stasi headquarters, the former seat of government of brown and red despots, unquote. Gauck's Auschwitz speech and Putin's disinvitation coincide with Berlin's open cooperation with the fascist successors of Nazi collaborators to stage a pro-Western coup in Kiev. The Kiev government has adopted their anti-Russian standpoints, which are also increasingly having an influence on the German debate, where they dovetail with old anti-Russian sentiments. Arseniy Yatsenyuk, by the way, referred to by Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland as, quote, Yats, unquote, the person she wanted in power in Ukraine. Arseniy Yatsenyuk recently caused a stir with his interview on German television. He literally alleged, quote, we all remember well the Soviet invasion of Ukraine and Germany. This statement has remained unchallenged. Again, that's why I call this walking the snake in Ukraine. It is a fundamental perversion of political reality. I have included in the description for the record, 832, another GermanForeignPolicy.com post that we used in For the Record 824. It is reprinted here in its entirety, as it was, by the way, in 824. I'm only going to read a short section of it. In late 2014, Russia introduced a resolution in the UN General Assembly condemning Third Reich commemorations, but the celebrations of Third Reich collaborators as freedom fighters. 115 nations voted in favor of this resolution. Germany, twisting the arms of the other EU countries, abstained. Three countries voted against it. Ukraine, of course, where the Nazi OUNB collaborator succession heirs are in power. Canada and the United States can have very large emigre populations. That post, honoring collaborators, from GermanForeignPolicy.com, November 26th of 2014. Just part of that. The Federal Republic of Germany has refused to vote in favor of a UN resolution condemning the glorification of National Socialism and Nazi collaboration. Last week, the Third Committee of the UN General Assembly passed a resolution strongly criticizing the edification of memorials to Nazi functionaries and the stylization of Nazi collaborators as freedom fighters, unquote. Germany and the other EU nations abstained. The USA, Canada, and Ukraine voted against the document, with 115 nations voting in favor. And again, that entire article is reprinted in its entirety in the description for the record 832. Again, on the SpitfireList.com website, every program is turned into a long article-length description with all of the relevant documentation and text excerpts reprinted in their entirety. For the Record is sort of a hybrid media form. It is meant to be read as well as listened to, and if you're only listening on the radio, you are missing the better part of the For the Record experience. I have seen efforts at Holocaust denial and revisionism and the slow perversion of history, and we are now seeing that take place. I can see how eventually not only the crimes of the Third Reich, but fascism in general and the Holocaust in particular will be first relativized, then minimalized, and ultimately perverted by characterizing the accurate historical record as Russian or Soviet or Kremlin propaganda. And I want to note an article from Yahoo News of January 1st of this year, 2015. It, in turn, is an Agence France-Presse article, the very prestigious French press agency. And it is about the march in Ukraine commemorating the birthday of Stefan Bandera, leader of the OUNB, the Ukrainian fascist organization that collaborated with the Third Reich and contributed substantively to the SS and to the Einsatzgruppen that conducted the mass murders of Jews, Poles, and others in Ukraine. This article, again, Yahoo News, January 1st, 2015, an Agence France-Presse story by Dmitry Zaks, Z-A-K-S, thousands of Ukraine nationalists march in Kiev. Now, note here as I read this, the relativistic language here. Historical reality, and Stefan Bandera was a flat-out fascist and a Nazi collaborator. Note how this is all spun as the Russians say, or Putin says, or the Kremlin says. That's like saying, well, President Putin has alleged that 2 + 2 = 4, or the Kremlin expresses the view that 2 + 2 = 4. A lot of people disagree. The reality is that clear-cut. But again, note the supple perversion of language. This really is what George Orwell spoke about in 1984. This is newspeak. So is what Joachim Gauck, the German president, was saying as well. It's a supple perversion of language that in turn is slowly but very surely perverting the historical and political record. Like what is in Serpent's Walk, where the snake slowly walks, slowly slithers up to its position of primacy. The article reads in part, thousands of Ukrainian nationalists held a torchlight procession across Kiev on Thursday in honor of a 1940s anti-Soviet insurgent branded by Moscow as a Nazi collaborator whom Europe must reject. The march on what would have been Stefan Bandera's 106th birthday moved along the same streets on which hundreds of thousands rallied for 3 months last winter before ousting a Moscow-backed president. Some wore World War II-era army uniforms, while others draped themselves in the red and black nationalist flags and chanted, "Ukraine belongs to Ukrainians," unquote, and, quote, "Bandera will return and restore order," unquote. Quote, "The Kremlin is afraid of Bandera because he symbolizes the very idea of a completely independent Ukraine," unquote, Lydia Ushi, U-S-H-I-Y, said while holding up a portrait of the far-right icon at the head of the march. Bandera is a mythical but immensely divisive figure in Ukraine whom some compare to Cuba's Che Guevara. His movement's slogan, "Glory to Ukraine, glory to the heroes," was also the catchphrase of last year's pro-European revolt. Russian President Vladimir Putin in March called that uprising's leaders the ideological heirs of Bandera, Hitler's accomplices during World War II. Bandera was the ideological patron of resistance fighters who fought alongside invading German forces during World War II. Notice the subtle use of language. Russian President Vladimir Putin in March called the uprising's leaders the ideological heirs of Bandera. Well, that's absolutely true. And he was Hitler's accomplice during World War II. And he was not a resistance fighter at all. He was a fascist, Nazi, mass murderer. His political protege was Yaroslav Stetsko, the president of the wartime government in Ukraine. And his personal secretary in the early 1980s, Roman Sivarich, not only formed one of Ukraine's primary political parties, the Ukrainian National Congress, he also was the justice minister, the equivalent of our attorney general, under not only both Timoshenko governments, but the Viktor Yushchenko Orange Revolution government. He is a key advisor to Petro Poroshenko today. And again, the perversion of language. The Kremlin says, Putin alleges, it's just like saying again, the Kremlin has alleged that 2 plus 2 equals 4. The political record is that clear, but the way things are going, we're going to have a generation, in a generation or two, people are going to be saying, you don't think 2 plus 2 equals 4, do you? 2 plus 2 equals 7. The rest is just Kremlin propaganda. What's the matter with you? One of the most knowledgeable and courageous and, frankly, eloquent commentators on Ukraine, one of the few people who really has been willing to analyze correctly and express accurately what has been going on, is George Eliason, E-L-I-A-S-O-N, who, by the way, is an internet website developer in Ukraine itself. We have done a number of articles, featured a number of articles by him. For the record, 783, number 824, and 826 have featured his work prominently. And last year, while the Maidan, quote, revolution, unquote, something, by the way, the head of Stratfor, the American national security analyst firm, or analytical firm, has termed, I'm paraphrasing slightly, as obvious or naked a coup as has ever taken place. While the Maidan coup was taking place, George Eliason was accurately analyzing the forces that were coming to power, and he expressed them. He analyzed them in an essay that was published on the Op-Ed News blog February 26th of 2014, again by George Eliason, E-L-I-A-S-O-N. Is the rebellion in Ukraine really aimed at creating a national socialist state? And it reads in part. The award-winning journalist Max Blumenthal is exactly right to suggest, as he does in his recent alternate piece, that the U.S. has ties to Nazi and fascist protesters in Ukraine. The CIA agrees with him, and so did George Bush Sr. The only difference in their appraisal is the use of the term neo-Nazi rather than Nazi. It is just too hard for anyone to fathom that large communities of World War II Nazis not only survived, but have thrived and been protected all these years in Lvov, a city and provincial district in western Ukraine, the United States, and Canada. After World War II, many in the Waffen-SS went home to their native Lvov district, a region in Ukraine. Others emigrated there, including members of three Waffen-SS divisions, the Waffen-SS Galician, the Waffen-SS Nightingale, and the Waffen-SS Roland. These Hitler minions were barely investigated and never tried for crimes against humanity, although a part of their training was to serve as guards in concentration camps like Auschwitz. Again, Ukrainian fascists of the OUNB in large measure staffed the concentration camps, including Auschwitz, whose liberation commemoration President Putin has been excluded from by the EU. Again, repeating the last sentence, these Hitler minions were barely investigated and never tried for crimes against humanity, although a part of their training was to serve as guards in concentration camps like Auschwitz. In that capacity, they were responsible for the deaths of 200,000 Jews, 100,000 Poles, and at least 150,000 Ukrainians. CIA documents certify what every white paper I have come across states clearly. Each successive generation that derived from the initial post-war Waffen-SS settlement in Lvov, was brought up to be more committed than the one before to making Ukraine a national socialist state. Two important players in the unfolding events in Ukraine are the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America and UCCA and the Ukrainian World Congress or UWC. The UCCA is understood to support the left-leaning rebels in that conflict, and the UWC organized as an international coordinating body for Ukrainian communities in the diaspora, is believed to support Ukraine's integration into the European Union. However, three separate Freedom of Information Act documents released under the Nazi War Crimes Disclosure Act provide all the information needed to understand the true objectives of these non-governmental organizations or NGOs. The only freedom, unquote, these groups want is a national socialist Ukraine. Skipping down. An FOIA released document goes as far as to say that the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, or ABN, led by Ukrainian independence leader Slava Stetsko until her death in 2003, was in fact the National Socialist Government in exile. OUNB is the originator and a decisive factor in the ABN, or Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. This is a quote from the document, by the way, quote, OUNB is the originator and a decisive factor in the ABN, Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, which includes representatives of various non-Russian emigre organizations. In the USA, the activities of the ABN are conducted by, and the rest is redacted. From the 1930s until today, these groups have been preparing for the revolution that is underway. Another Freedom of Information Act released document from 2007 entitled Major Ukrainian Emigre Political Organizations Worldwide, unquote, lists member groups in the UCCA and UWC as OUNB active organizations at the date of publication. This document makes it very clear that even in the 1970s, the Ukrainian National Socialist political machine continued to demonstrate pre-World War II aggressiveness. We learn that, quote, at the beginning of the 1970s, the Ukrainian political spectrum had many features of the pre-war Ukrainian political groupings. The decisive political role was played by three factions of the OUN, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, the OUNB Bandera, OUNM Melnik, and OUNZ, standing for Za Kordonim Abroad, unquote. The document then goes on to discuss Yaroslav Stetsko, the husband of Slava Stetsko and head of the Bandera faction of the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN. Quote, in August of 1941, Stetsko wrote his autobiography. He states that although he considers Moscow rather than Jewry to be the main enemy of imprisoned Ukraine, he absolutely endorses the idea of the indubitably harmful role of Jews in the enslavement of Ukraine by Moscow. He finally states that he absolutely endorses the extermination of Jews as opposed to assimilating them and the rationality of the German methods of extermination. Unquote. Further excerpts from, quote, major Ukrainian emigre political organizations worldwide, unquote, include the following, quote, in Canada, in May of 2010, senior Ukrainian opposition leader Oleh Tiyanovich, by the way, whose Svoboda organization controlled several ministries, including the Defense Ministry and the Justice Ministry in the provisional transition government in Ukraine. Beginning again, quote, in Canada, in May of 2010, senior Ukrainian opposition leader Oleh Tiyanovich received the Golden Cross, quote, for his service to Ukraine from the Brotherhood of the Veterans of the 1st Ukrainian Division of the Ukrainian National Army, Veterans of the Waffen-SS Galician. Organization that, unquote, by the way, Organization for the Defense of Four Freedoms for Ukraine. Again, quoting from the document, OUNB is closely associated with SUM, Association of Ukrainian Youth, and such civic organizations as EG00CHSU in the USA, the Organization for the Defense of Four Freedoms for Ukraine. Similarly, OUNM has its adherents among members of the UNO and Ukrainian National Unity in Canada. The members and followers of OUNZ are active in the USA and OPVBU, the Association for Free Ukraine. OUNZ, as well as OKVUPA, Association of Former Members of the UPA Ukrainian Insurgent Army, recognize ZPUHVR, Foreign Representation of the Supreme Ukrainian Liberation Council, as their representative political body. OUNB Bandera faction, again from this Freedom of Information Act document, a CIA analysis division document, by the way. The analysis division is small, and significant elements of it are, quote, good guys, unquote. It's kind of simplistic and childish, but there really are two CIAs. A smaller one is what one would expect from an American intelligence service. They are good guys. They are associated with the Democratic Party, but the much larger and more powerful CIA are bad guys, and they are fascists, and they are associated with the Republicans and do the bidding of the transnational corporations, and are basically subversive of and hostile to the real interests of the American people. This is from the Analysis Division. OUNB Bandera faction, quote, after 1991, the OUN faced considerable difficulties reestablishing itself in an independent Ukraine. It split between the Congress of Ukrainian Nationalists in Ukraine and the emigre OUNB. No fewer than four organizations claimed to be the heirs to Stefan Bandera, KUN and the emigre OUNB, the clandestine Trident and Vio Svoboda, whose ideology was inspired by Stetsko's ideology of two revolutions, one national and one social. Trident, by the way, is the parent organization of Pravi Sektor, another of the direct OUNB heirs that also helped participated in the controlled ministries, participated in ministries in the transition government, and now has key people in the new, quote, new, unquote, Ukrainian Congress, skipping down. Today, the same allied forces that fought the Third Reich in World War II, and see, again, this is, this, by the way, is a misprint. Today, the same allied forces that fought for the Third Reich in World War II are setting up a Nazi Ukraine. It's beyond belief. The Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, UCCA, the Ukrainian World Congress, UWC, and associated organizations are powerful lobbying groups. They have successfully lobbied the U.S. Congress to provide unquestioning support for their view of Ukraine. Their influence may be the result of the success they had in the Cold War against the Soviets, parenthetically, that while serving four elements of Western intelligence, including the larger, more powerful, and malevolent faction of CIA. Go to any of their chapter websites. All the associated groups are supporting the so-called Maidan opposition movement, named after Kiev's central square where the protests picked up steam, by donating themselves and by soliciting donations from the public. The people making the donations are probably not aware that the money will fund, among other things, the Trizub group led by Dmitry Yarosh, now, by the way, called Pravi Sektor. For any of the leaders of these groups to say they are not supporting and funding National Socialism or Nazism in Ukraine is a slap in the face of reality. Ironically, this year marks the 70th anniversary of D-Day. Again, that document was from February of 2014. Those realities have become established, and basically they have set up the Nazi allies, the OUNB, as the dominant factor in Ukraine. We're going to review some articles that we looked at in, for the record, 829 briefly. One of the things that the OUNB successor government in Ukraine is doing is cutting off entitlements to elderly and needy residents of eastern Ukraine. And basically what they are doing is committing a war crime. They're basically using starvation as a weapon of war. AP's, the Associated Press's, big story of November 25th of 2014, an article by Peter Leonard and Balint, B-A-L-I-N-T, Zlanko, S-Z-L-A-N-K-O, cash cut to Ukraine rebel areas is risky strategy. And we see skipping down. The move is part of Ukraine's plan to suffocate its separatist foe now that its costly military campaign has foundered. Authorities say they are also withdrawing all state services from rebel areas, although hospital and school workers in the rebel stronghold of Donetsk says it has been a while since they last saw funding. Anyhow, skipping down. What Poroshenko is saying to us is, you are no longer Ukrainians. You won't get pensions. You won't get social payments. When you croak, then we'll stop this war against you, unquote, said Donetsk retiree Georgi Sharov, S-H-A-R-O-V, again quoting, but I don't want to go to Ukraine and beg for their mercy, unquote. And still more about that very same policy. From USA Today of December 25th of last year, 2014, an article by Tatiana Goryachova, G-O-R-Y-A-C-H-O-V-A, and Hal Foster, retirees starve in rebel-held eastern Ukraine. Skipping down. The government cut off pensions this month to people in all areas of eastern Ukraine controlled by separatists to undercut support for pro-Russian rebels. The number of starvation deaths in Donetsk is hard to pin down, largely because the conflict between Ukraine and separatist forces has crippled government functions in the east, including medical and coroner's offices that record causes of deaths. The siege of the city that began in August has led to 40% of the city's 1 million people fleeing. And still more skipping down. The cutoff, announced November 5th, means payments will no longer, quote, be stolen by pro-Russian bandits, unquote, Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk said. That's the fellow, by the way, who said, we all remember well the Russian invasion of Ukraine and Germany, referring to, of course, World War II. Continuing, by the way, as we are going to see, the so-called volunteer battalions, such as the Azov Battalion, are working very hard to block all relief aid going to civilians in eastern Ukraine. Donetsk Mayor in exile Alexander Lukyanchenko, or Lukyanchenko, L-U-K-Y-A-N-C-H-E-N-K-O, who fled to Kiev in August after receiving separatist death threats, has criticized the government for the cutoff. The only way for residents of neighboring Donetsk and Luhansk provinces to get their pensions back is to go to a city outside the war zone to re-register for benefits. Many retirees lack the health or the money to travel so far from their homes, Lukyanchenko said. Yatsenyuk, the prime minister, said the pensions the government withholds are accruing for the beneficiaries and will be paid once the eastern region is free of separatist control. A more substantive analysis of this, by the way, talking about the role of the volunteer battalions, basically like Azov, the Ukrainian equivalent of the Waffen-SS, and by the way, their helmets celebrate that. They have swastikas and SS logo on them. A Reuters story by Kieran, K-I-E-R-A-N, Gilbert, G-U-I-L-B-E-R-T, of January 8th of this year, 2015. More than 1 million flee. Ukraine close to humanitarian catastrophe, unquote, skipping down. The UN said an estimated 5.2 million people in Ukraine were living in conflict zones, of whom 1.4 million were highly vulnerable and in need of assistance as they faced financial problems, a lack of services and aid, and harsh winter conditions, skipping down. The provision of humanitarian aid to them was being hampered by pro-Kiev volunteer battalions that were increasingly preventing food and medicine from reaching those in need in eastern Ukraine, he said. Quote, attempting to create unbearable conditions of life is a whole new ballgame, using starvation of civilians as a method of warfare is a war crime, unquote. The battalions often act like renegade gangs, unquote, and urgently need to be brought under control, Krivosheev said. Oh, by the way, that is Denise Krivosheev, K-R-I-V-O-S-H-E-E-V, Deputy Director of Europe and Central Asia at Amnesty International. And again, his quote, attempting to create unbearable conditions of life is a whole new ballgame. Using starvation of civilians as a method of warfare is a war crime. The volunteer battalions often act like renegade gangs, unquote, and urgently need to be brought under control, Krivosheev added. Well, the interior minister of Ukraine and people who are now in parliament, such as Andrei Beletri, commander of the Azov battalion, and Oleg Lyashkov of the Radical Party, closely associated with Azov, are now in the Ukrainian government. The deputy commander of Azov battalion is now the chief of police in Kiev, the capital of the country. Again, basically, this is a war crime. This is Nazi-style forced mass starvation and deprivation. But we're not hearing about it here in the land of the free, the home of the brave, etc. Another courageous and accurate assessment of what is going on. This in the relatively mainstream Market Watch blog of January 20th of 2015. It's by Chris Martinson, M-A-R-T-E-N-S-O-N, opinion. Perhaps you missed it. We're at war with Russia, unquote. And in previous programs, we noted that U.S. Intelligence analysts analyzing reconnaissance satellite photographs have basically said, as Robert Perry has reported on Consortium News, that no, there is no Russian invasion of Ukraine. They are supporting, they're channeling some weapons, and there are volunteers. By the way, that is absolutely justified. They would be justified in invading, although it would lead to a third world war. We'd all be dead. The OUNB heirs in Ukraine have openly threatened to invade Russia and conquer Russian territory. We've talked about that in, for the records, 783 and 818. What's going on here is a war. And I would note that with the statements that we are seeing, say, NATO says, NATO now involves, now includes many countries that basically are involved with the old ABN, anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, milieu, the Baltic states, Croatia, Romania, Bulgaria, and others. And they are now part of NATO. And as we have looked at in the past, again, another article from Robert Perry's Consortium News website, they are basically parroting the old Hitler commemorative wand, the very thing that was condemned in that UN resolution that the U.S. voted against. If, in fact, as noted here, Russia really had invaded Ukraine, it would be the simplest of things to show tons of photographs of this, and we haven't seen any. The few photographs we've seen come from a private company called Digital Globe, which was formed by veterans of Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, and the executives of it have curricula vitae dating back that show participation in Bain and Company, the old Mitt Romney firm, and also Information Handling Services, a wholly owned subsidiary of Thyssen-Bornemisza Industries. This, again, by Chris Martinson, M-A-R-T-E-N-S-O-N, from Market Watch of January 20th of 2015. Opinion, perhaps you missed it, we're at war with Russia. The U.S. has been waging economic, financial, trade, and political war against Russia and even kinetic war by proxy in Ukraine. Worryingly, nobody in power in the U.S. or Europe really seems willing to tell us exactly why. From the Russian point of view, everything from their plunging ruble to bitter sanctions to the falling price of oil are the fault of the U.S. either directly or indirectly. And by the way, that is accurate. Whether that is fair or not is irrelevant. That's the view of the Russians right now. So no surprise, it doesn't dispose them towards goodwill negotiations with the West generally and the U.S. specifically. Recently, the anti-Russian stance in the U.S. press has quieted down, presumably because the political leadership has moved its attention on to other things, and that means that Russia is largely out of the U.S. news cycle. However, there is plenty of serious action going on in Russia and Ukraine, as well as related activity in the U.S. that deserves our careful attention. The U.S. via John Kerry and NATO have steadily accused Russia of having funneled hundreds of tanks, armored personnel carriers, and other heavy equipment to the separatists in eastern Ukraine. These assertions bring to mind the Sherlock Holmes case of the dog that did not bark, where the absence of a piece of evidence leads us to a very different conclusion than the one the U.S. political establishment would like us to believe. The sorts of weaponry that NATO and the U.S. have charged Russia with providing are virtually impossible to conceal from the air. Snapping high-resolution photos of such war machinery is child's play for today's military satellites and even civilian ones, too. If the assertions were true, we should have seen a flood of photographs of Russian heavy equipment every step of the way as it passed into Ukraine. But none have been offered, not even one so far. And the simplest explanation for this is that none exist. If they did, you can be 100% certain they'd have been released and replayed over and over again on CNN until everybody and their uncle could distinguish a T-72 outline from that of a T-64. What concerns me even more than these undocumented charges are two especially ill-conceived, if not overtly confrontational, pieces of legislation passed by the Congress in December. The first is House Resolution 758, passed on December 4th, which, among other charges, accused Russia of having invaded Ukraine, again without providing or referring to any sort of evidence, photographic or otherwise, entitled "Strongly Condemning the Actions of the Russian Federation under President Vladimir Putin, which has carried out a policy of aggression against neighboring countries aimed at political and economic domination," unquote. The resolution is packed with a variety of one-sided assertions and leaves no diplomatic wiggle room for the possibility that Russia has a different view of what has transpired in Ukraine. Skipping down. The Ukraine Freedom Support Act of 2014, or Senate 2828, was passed by the Senate on December 11th. This goes even further than merely condemning Russia and authorizes the distribution of both lethal and non-lethal military aid to Kiev, including sniper and assault rifles, mortars and shells, Stinger missiles, anti-tank missiles, night vision goggles, radar systems, and a host of other hardware items. If the tables were turned and it were the Russian lawmakers passing a resolution condemning the U.S. for a variety of international crimes for which exactly zero proof was offered, and then were actively arming a dangerous conflict on the U.S. border, I think we all know just how ablaze with indignity the U.S. political leadership would be, and rightly so. So is it any surprise that Russian Foreign Ministry spokesman Alexander Lukashevich said in response, quote, "Both houses of the U.S. Congress have approved the Ukraine Freedom Support Act, bypassing debates and proper voting," by the way, as we will see next in our next program. When the House passed this at almost midnight, there were three members of the House of Representatives present, for this. Three members. Beginning again. So is it any surprise that Russian Foreign Ministry spokesman Alexander Lukashevich said in response, quote, "Both houses of the U.S. Congress have approved the Ukraine Freedom Support Act, bypassing debates and proper voting. The overtly confrontational message of the new law cannot but evoke profound regret. Once again, Washington is leveling baseless, sweeping accusations against Russia and threatening more sanctions," unquote. The really bizarre part of this story is that I cannot yet find any credible analysis or commentary explaining exactly what the U.S.'s interests are in Ukraine that are so compelling as to risk a confrontation with Russia. and it bothers a great many analysts that the U.S. is on an increasingly combative course with yet another country without providing any evidence in support of its accusations and actions. Again, in response, Russia is rapidly withdrawing from additional dialogue with the U.S. and Europe, while drawing ever closer to China, Turkey, and India. Russians feel that they are already under siege from the U.S. and that acts of war have already been committed. Despite being almost completely out of the U.S. news cycle, events are in and around the Ukraine situation actually picking up pace. On January 15th, Ukraine President Petro Poroshenko signed a decree mobilizing 50,000 new servicemen to the front lines, and Russia just announced that Europe will have to accept gas via Turkey as the Ukraine route is being shut down. The situation remains much more fluid and nuanced than we're being told by the Western media, which will put much more to this story than a short column allows. Those interested in delving deeper can read our latest report here. But in short, the situation is getting more strained, not less, and it has the very real chance of blossoming into something far larger and far more deadly than the sparse coverage in the Western press might imply. If it looks like a war, acts like a war, and smells like a war, it may just be a war. Everyone should be very concerned by these events, but especially European leaders. I would add, this could result in a nuclear war. The OUNB, Nazi collaborative fascists in power in Ukraine, they specialize in provocation. And when you're talking a nuclear power here, that is very dangerous. There is also, as we will see next week, examining a very important article, there is also the very real possibility that a Russian economic collapse and resulting default could do terrible economic harm to the entire world, including Europe and the U.S. There are three articles here talking about how the new head of Ukraine's anti-corruption bureau may very well be a foreigner, perhaps an American. These are reprinted in their entirety in the description to, for the record, 832. From the ZIK.UA, an apparent Ukrainian blog from the Cyrillic print, ZIK.UA, January 11th of 2015, foreigner may head Ukraine's anti-corruption bureau. Skipping down, the key figure in the ACB is its director. He did not exclude the possibility for a foreigner to occupy this position. That again, after the new finance minister of Ukraine is a Ukrainian-American State Department officer named Natalie Jaresko, who had overseen companies that were capitalized largely through the Agency for International Development and who was accused by credible figures of serious financial shenanigans. And yet another article about this, and I'm eclipsing this due to the limitations of time, also from the ZIK.AU blog, December 22nd of 2014, Coalition proposes Italian anti-corruption fighter for selection commission of ACB head. All the coalition factions support Italian Giovanni Kessler, the director of the European Anti-Corruption Bureau, for membership of a 10-member commission that will choose three candidates for Ukraine's anti-corruption bureau head, Oleh Ryashko wrote in Facebook on December 22nd. By the way, Oleh Ryashko, the head of the Radical Party, closely associated with the OUNB milieu and the Azov Battalion. And again, we may very well see a foreigner, perhaps an American, as head of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, really as we have looked at in, for the record, programs 818 and 826. That really is an anti-Russian bureau, not anti-corruption at all. And we've already seen Georgians, Lithuanian-Americans, and Ukrainian-Americans appointed to key ministerial positions in Ukraine. We're going to conclude by taking a look at an article that really is sort of the documentation of a ministry, an Orwellian-style ministry of truth. There has been very little coverage of this in the West. NATO has put together a body to, quote, combat Russian information warfare, unquote, basically to manage the news in an anti-Russian fashion for Western audiences. This from the Financial Times of December 7th of 2014, an article by Sam Jones, J-O-N-E-S. NATO seeks weapons to counter Russia's information war, it reads in part. A casual consumer of Russian media might conclude that the western Ukrainian city of Lvov, one of the strongholds of the nation's pro-EU uprising, has been overrun by violent fascists. So a video recently uploaded to YouTube will prove disappointing, called Where Are All the Fascists in Lvov, unquote. It features a correspondent walking the city's peaceful streets, interviewing slightly bemused, decidedly unmilitant shoppers. The online video was produced and published by NATO. It is a modest new weapon the alliance is deploying as it seeks to fight back against a Kremlin information campaign that is posing a new worry for Western policymakers alongside Russian bombs and espionage. Russia is weaponizing information in this crisis, unquote, says James Apparaturai, APPATHURAI, the alliance's Deputy Assistant Secretary General for Public Affairs. Quote, they are reaching deep into our own electorates to affect politics, unquote, skipping down. NATO has also put together a new web portal called Setting the Record Straight. It is available in Russian, Ukrainian, English, and French, and fleshed out with dozens of documents, statements, videos, and images. One section lists 25 myths, unquote, about the alliance, coupled with, quote, factual, unquote, rebuttals. Another, quote, timeline, unquote, of events compiles links to every single NATO pronouncement, press conference, speech, or official Q&A relating to Ukraine and Russia since February. Perhaps most significantly, the alliance has begun to coordinate, quote, messaging, unquote, among its members, a senior official said. Shared lines are now being sent out to strategic communications teams working in the foreign ministries of members for use. Shortly before the NATO summit in Wales this September, the alliance also opened a new Center of Excellence, unquote, for strategic communications in Riga, Latvia, which is intended to serve as a clearinghouse for anti-propaganda ideas and research. While NATO has joined the information war, many in the alliance acknowledge its efforts are still in their infancy, particularly when set against the vast Russian campaign, unquote. We've come a long way in responding, but it clearly is not enough, Mr. Apparaturai said. There are 20 or so people in NATO's public diplomacy team who are at work trying to counter an organized, multifaceted, well-funded Russian operation that is going on across the world, unquote. Truly Orwellian. In fact, although not flawless, the Russian point of view is accurate. I've noted the old Turkish proverb, he who tells the truth gets chased out of 9 villages, and I am strongly supportive of the Russian position vis-a-vis Ukraine. I'm also strongly supportive of the National Security Agency and the GCHQ in Raphael Snowden. And in fact, as I spoke about in For the Record 829, I believe they are connected. And again, I support Russia in this, and I support NSA and GCHQ in the Snowden thing because both are right. Before I sign off, do subscribe to the comments feed into the SpitfireList.com website. There is a link at the top of the description for the Record 832, which will allow you to do that. There are expert comments on all kinds of things I simply don't have time to squeeze into articles and programs, many of them contributed by an expert associate editor named Tara Fractal. This concludes For the Record program number 832, Walking the Snake in Ukraine, Part 5. We all remember well the Soviet invasion of Ukraine and Germany. This is being recorded on January 25th of 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.